Hello and welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21. And this is one of the webinars we do called, Conversations Across Borders. And we do it with Traces Dreams. And we've got Marina Folletto with us today, who's going to join us and help with the questions. And today we're going to look at a really interesting subject. I mean, as climate change and the emergency gets worse and worse, many businesses are going to realize and understand that they have to operate in a green way, in a sustainable way. And we're talking today to Samara Croce, who is in a company called Aquafil, and they produce textile florins and synthetic fibers. And they decided some time ago that they really, really had to go green. They had to be sustainable. They had to create a circular economy. Now, that's not easy if you've not done it before, but it's a journey that many companies have made and more will as time goes forward. So we thought we'd talk to Samara about the journey that her company's taken, the experience she's had about communications, about what she does, and about some of the issues that it raises. So Samara, thanks for joining us today. And first, so that people know something about yourself, can you briefly, I know briefly is difficult, but could you briefly tell us a bit about yourself?
Thank you for having me, first of all. I'm very happy to be here with you. I'm Italian. But I'm living now in the United States, in Georgia, near Atlanta. And my background is in advertising, journalism, and now brand communication and marketing communication. So I've been working for Aquafil for, eight years, and I've been working for the headquarters, which is in Italy, in Trentino. For 6 or 7 years, and then I moved here to the States to take care of the brand communication here for the US market.
Benvenuta Samara. The Aquafil, as Francis mentioned, at some point started thinking about the possibility of producing fibers from a waste. It was not easy. It was a difficult journey. And Giulio Bonazza, the chairman, once said, "Fortunately, we underestimate the difficulty of this journey." What is actually Econil? What is the result of this journey?
So, just to explain a little bit what was Aquafil before. Aquafil celebrated its 50th birthday a few years ago. So it's a old family company, and Giulio Bonazzi is the CEO at the moment, the president of Aquafil, and he was the one who 9 years ago, now 9 years ago, came up with a. It was a little bit before 9 years ago, but nine years ago is when we started with the Econil regeneration process, which is an industrial process that allows to produce nylon instead of oil, from waste. So our Econil is called this nylon. Our Econil is made 100% from waste material instead of oil. And this was the big idea that Bonazzi had. So to change the company to a heavy industrial company, very much based on oil, to another type of company, which was looking into other means of production. And today, Econil comes from fishing nets, all the carpet that we recycle, textile components. And it's all recycled into this Econil nylon, which is used once again for fashion items and for carpet flooring. And so, yes, this was how a family company became a multinational, which is now public also in the stock exchange in Italy since 2 years ago.
Well, you said that Bonanza had this big idea about 10 years ago. I mean, what made him have it? What was the change? What happened in his life or in the company that made him say, we've got to do things differently?
I think it's a mix of things. It's the fact that it was the change from the older generation to the new one. So he was taking the place of his father before. So he was bringing simply new ideas. It was also one of our customers who is Interface. And I maybe many people have seen his TED talk, David Anderson. He decided that his company Interface, producing carpet flooring, had to become a more sustainable company. And so he asked his suppliers to supply more sustainable ingredients. And so Bonazzi was one of the suppliers at the moment, and Aquafil was one of the suppliers. And so that changed all the supply chain, and we came up with a new ingredient. So it was the mix of that, and it was also, I think, the time it was coming. And he was faster than others to realize that it was coming. And this is how it happened. He always tells the story about being crazy in a way, because at that moment, many people say he was crazy thinking about doing nylon, not with oil, but with waste. And he said that maybe he was crazy because he didn't know. And he was lucky enough to know, because there were so many problems that came after when we were developing the process and we didn't thought about at the beginning. And they were big problems, but we faced them and we overcome them. But maybe thinking at the beginning of only the problems would have been like disastrous.
And on the Aquafil website, you mentioned three things that you could focus on if you would like to become even more sustainable. And you mentioned energy and recycling, what did not surprise me, but I found pretty interesting that you mentioned culture and a culture of sustainability. And you write, constant training of employees and partnerships with customers and suppliers. Why is this so important, and how do you do it actually?
I think culture is super important, and I think we see it now, especially how culture can change and give starting to new way of thinking. And so for sure, culture, it's not only the culture of a company, which is important for sure, because internal communication is always very, very, very important, but it's also the culture that develops around the company. So it's also the relationship you have with suppliers, with customers, and broader with other stakeholders. And it's so important, especially when you go into environmental sustainability or social sustainability, because you simply cannot be sustainable alone. So even if we were producing a sustainable ingredient and then our customers are not using the ingredient in a sustainable way, it would be just useless. So really the culture that develops through the whole supply chain and then to society as a whole, and customers choosing the sustainable products and designers designing products in a way that it's easy to recycle them. So it's not only to use that ingredient, which is sustainable, but it's a whole way to transform everything that is around it.
Well, that whole transformation process that you're talking about in the company and designers and people you contract in, you also talked about supply chains as well. I mean, how important is that? I mean, did you manage to convince your supply chains they had to do things differently, or did you have to look for new supply chains?
I think it was a mix of both. So 9 years ago when we started, maybe the industries, and we work with two industries mainly, the design one with the carpet flooring and furniture, and then the fashion one. So when we started 9 years ago, maybe the industry were not that ready to take a product like ours. And so we started more with startup. So for example, in the fashion industry, we worked with small brands who were starting up. Some were also famous brands, but they were starting up. So they had a different mindset, and they were looking into including sustainability at the heart of their brand. So they were really looking into sustainable practice and sustainable ingredients. And so we started with them, and then it's kind of a word of mouth, and it became more spread out. And today we are working with big brands. And so now things have changed a lot. But at the beginning, I think you have to find the small tribes and the small communities that are more willing to try something new and to really commit to that idea. And then from there, you can spread out to bigger markets.
And so the communication of brands in general has changed a lot, probably from the beginning. So if we think about 10 years ago and what is now, and now we speak much more about purpose, of course, about sustainability. And we speak a lot, not only about storytelling, but also story making. How do you see it? How has it changed?
Ooh, it has changed a lot, hugely. So for sure, there's always going to be greenwashing. That's something for sure. But people are being more and more careful. And while at the beginning, you could just come up with stories and projects which were outside of your business, and you were just giving money to some NGO and forget about it. So I'm just giving money for this, and that's it. That's my sustainability project. And now sustainability has to really be integrated in your business and has to be part of your business. And that was the big change. And now almost many brands are becoming almost activists. One example is for sure Patagonia, who changed their mission to we are in the business of improving or saving the world. So now there is the tendency of being almost activists, which can be risky for some business because people are more and more looking into what you say and what you do and really scrutinizing things in action, as you say, story doing. So then you really have to stand behind what you're saying and your mouth, as we say. So I don't think that's something for everybody. And we can see it now also with all the protests that are here in the United States. Many brands are coming up with some messages to support Black Lives Matter. But it's not for everybody. I just hear in these days people saying, oh, why not more brands are doing this? But I also think that you should not say something if you're not behind it with actions. So really only some companies can do that.
Well, that's sort of interesting that in order to promote the brand, you've got to communicate a message and an alternative message, and you've got to get that over that resonates with the people you're talking to. But there's something more basic than that, in the way I think, Samara, you've got the short straw as communications manager. You've got to convince your customers that fishnets do work and not the old traditional things. They might say, gosh, I have fibers of fishnets. I mean, this is strange. You have a convincing job even in the product itself, don't you?
Yeah, but that's almost a given because I think was a big problem in sustainability. So at the beginning, because you were sustainable, you could afford to do a product of inferior quality. Oh, but it's sustainable. Or, you know, those ugly dresses that were recycled from pieces of grandma dress. Things like these are what now make the sustainability world sometimes seen as of inferior quality. So sometimes people saying sustainable fashion is ugly fashion. That's something that still resists a lot in the mindset of people. So, but today I think we have the ingredients and we have the materials that have the same performance as the polluting ones, And so you can really do sustainable fashion or sustainable design with beauty and with the performances you were asking me about, and still be sustainable. So yes, you do have to convince people that they have the same performance as the product that is not sustainable, but that's almost a given. You cannot go into the market with the product that is sustainable and doesn't have the same performance as the other.
And you probably, you change also the perspective from so communication business to business. Now it's even going business to customers. And we speak more and more about ingredient and branding as well. Can you tell us more about this? How does it work? How important it is?
So as a communication professional, I think this was one of the biggest challenges of my work, because we are working with an ingredient brand. So we are not producing a final product. And that's the first challenge, because we are producing something that other companies need to make other products. So in our case, it's a nylon, and it can be used for furniture, can be used for carpet flooring. So the first challenge is there. You don't have a final product to sell. But at the same time, because we were in sustainability so early on, we needed to create conversation about sustainable products, because people were not talking a lot about sustainable products. And when they were doing it, sometimes they were talking badly about sustainable products. So already 8-9 years ago, we started doing communication to consumers, final consumers, even if they are not our direct customers. But we were trying to create conversation about sustainability and to explain and to create awareness about the problem of climate change and the sustainable ingredients and sustainable design and the role of design in sustainability.
Okay, so I mean, you had to make a story around sustainability, which is important. But don't you have another problem now that people got used to this and they are a bit suspicious of companies and they say, aha, this is greenwashing. How do you get over that? How do you get people to understand that there is a real product there? And how do you get them to differentiate between, you know, what is false, fake, and what is real?
I don't have the answer to that. I mean, that's the huge... I wish people were questioning more, because I feel people are not really yet questioning enough of the products they're buying. And because we are all very busy, so you cannot... I was reading a book a few years ago about sustainable food by an Italian writer. It's a great book. And every chapter is about one ingredient. There's one chapter about tomatoes, one chapter about tuna fish, and one chapter about flour. And so I used to go to the supermarket and just look around and see, and I couldn't choose anything because I was questioning everything. And so that's very difficult to question everything all the time. But I wish people were doing it more. How do you convince them? Trying to be as much transparent as you can and try to create, also give the tools for people to compare one product from the other and try to explain the differences, make the cost of not choosing a sustainable product visible. I think that's very important. I think, for example, a great campaign that I think it was Fashion Revolution who did it. They created this machine that was dispensing t-shirts. They put it on main squares. Could be Amsterdam, but I'm not sure if it was Amsterdam or London. And you could put like €5 in this machine. And at the end, you could choose if you wanted the t-shirt or another thing. And meanwhile, what was happening is that they were showing you a video of how that t-shirt for $5 was made. And so after you saw that video and the supply chain that was behind the $5 t-shirt, you could decide if you really wanted that t-shirt or you wanted to give that money to improve the supply chain and improve the lives of people producing that tissue. So I think that that's key to make that difference visible.
And you speak very often about the need of thinking about the life cycle thinking of products. Mm-hmm. And you wrote also about this, that the majority of people actually say that they would buy, that would like to buy sustainable products, but when they, in the end, go and buy something, they may not buy a sustainable product. They do not, yes. They would not. And there are many reasons for that and possible solutions. Could you tell us more about this?
Yes, unfortunately, what we say and what we do, it's always very different, not only for how we buy things, but also for other. We are not rational. We are totally irrational. And there is a fantastic book called Factfulness by Hans Rosling. It's a great book about this.
Yes.
I think you put together two things. One is the life cycle thinking, which I think it's a good tool for people to enter in the mindset of understanding if a product is sustainable or not, and to do the right question, because I think everybody starts really from the questions. And so if you understand how, I mean, many people don't know that nylon comes from oil, for example. Just to make an example, many people don't realize that plastic comes from oil. So if you start thinking how do you do a product? What are the materials inside? Where those materials come from? Who made that product? Where was done? All these questions that comes up and people should do them, possibly to the brand, that's going to help a lot. Improving the supply chain for sure. And about the fact that we don't do what we should, that we say one thing and we do another thing, I think that's part of being human. And I also think that that's why sustainability should not be a choice in the future. Hopefully, it should be something that is there and you cannot do products which are not sustainable. And I think part of this, there should be the role of governments in this. So you should enter a shop and just find sustainable products. It could be that one is more sustainable than the other, but that should be a given. Hopefully that would be the future. And governments have a big role because they need to create legislation about this.
Okay, and from your point of view as a communications manager, do you think communications has changed when you're trying to create a sustainable product in the sense that you're no longer just selling to a customer, you're trying to have a dialogue with that customer all the time?
Yes, for sure. And maybe you're not even selling anymore. You're more communicating a word. So you're... products, and that's why brands are more important today than they were a few years ago, because brands, it's different from a product, just because brands has a whole world around. So you're not just buying a product, but you're buying the whole world that is around this product. And you're buying a series of values and appearance and images and a lot of things that goes around. So it's like, many people say, just to make a metaphor, that brands are like when you enter a hotel and you know some chains of hotels that are more or less similar, no? So when you create a brand, it should be like, you should imagine that you are entering this chain of hotels and you know exactly what is around, how the colors are and how people are going to treat you. That's the whole experience of the brand. And so that has changed a lot, and it's very aligned with what people are looking for, because now people, it's true that they're not always doing what they say, but more and more they are looking for products that that show also the value that they believe in. So they're looking for more than just the product.
You wrote also about the fact that very often we do not know exactly what is important in a product. So you made an example of the denim in the USA, of the boiling water in the UK, and this is in general, we say that now we need a more holistic approach and collaborations across industries and stakeholders to cope with the challenges, isn't it?
Yes. And this goes back to the idea that I was telling you about, that you cannot be sustainable alone. And in any case, it's not just about sustainability, as we have seen now with COVID, everything is connected. And the idea that we had, that we were individuals and could make our own decision, we were countries and we could make our own decision, that's the wrong idea. We are all interconnected. So in the same way, in the supply chain, we are all connected. So you have to work with customers in a new way, almost like in a non-competitive way. So you have to work even with your competitors. And ideas come from that, but also improvements come from that. And that's the only way also, because sometimes you come up with a thing, crisis like this, and you realize that if you were connected, things were going to be better. And so, yeah, for sure, connection and collaboration, it's a big thing. Also with many new entities which you didn't thought about. In our case, Aquafil is a synthetic manufacturer for synthetic fibers. So who knew that we were going to collaborate with the divers? We collaborate with divers who are recovering the fishnet from the ocean. Who knew that we were going to collaborate with an NGO that was doing that? So you should be looking for collaboration everywhere.
Yeah, I gather you work with healthyseas.org, which involves you in that. I mean, we're getting close to the end, but let me ask you, we're in this pandemic at the moment of COVID-19. Do you think that will have an impact on people and make them change their views about the world we live in? I know that Arundhati Roy argued that historically pandemics have forced humans to break with the past and imagine a new future. Do you see a positive side of the pandemic in terms of the climate change world, that they may see sustainability as the important principle we must now aim for?
So this is the big question everybody are asking, and I'm quite positive about everything related to this. At the beginning, I was afraid that the cutting cost everywhere and budget everywhere was going to affect sustainability. But I really think that brands, companies, and many people have understand that some companies which were more into sustainability reacted better to this crisis. And so sustainability in a way is connected to resilience and to the ability to react to these kind of things. So I think sustainability is going to be the big thing going through. It's not going to be just sustainability, it's going to be well-being, health. That's going to be the big focus coming through. For sure, we have realized that we were living in a box and not noticing, or noticing but without doing many things. And so now there are many things to address, for sure, and many questions to do. And I think I read today another article by Arundhati Roy, and she's finishing this article on Financial Times saying something like, who is going to be held accountable for all this tragedy? I hope it's not going to be just a virus. So there was a lot we were not talking about and we were not addressing. And so this just revealed and opened the curtain. And sustainability is for sure one of those things.
I like to mention a video that LTC is produced, and in this video, they say true beauty is never shallow. It has depth like the ocean. The beauty of a product does not come from its look, but it comes from its story. And of course, I'm also a video maker, and in this moment you say, oh, they are written in a great way. But I really hope that it's not shallow, you know, that there are many, many stories that are not shallow. And this is my question. How can we use the power of imagination, of stories, of words, to overcome the different challenges in communication, sustainability, or in...
Well, I think it was a problem of imagination from the very beginning. And another Indian writer, Amita Ghosh, wrote it a few years ago. There was the big blindness was the title of that book, I think. And he was talking about the fact that it's a problem of imagination, the climate change crisis. And for sure, as I was saying, there was a lot of things that we were seeing and not doing anything about. So imagination can help in the way that we need to imagine a different future. And we are starting to understand that that's possible, because before everybody was saying, no, that's impossible. We cannot stop everything, which is true. We cannot stop everything. For sure, we don't want to stop everything like it happened now. But this is possible. So it's a way, imagination, it's a way of imagining different future, different options. Which already exist, but they were in small level. So I guess now we just have to research how different people were living and how different communities were thriving.
So, okay. So, final question. Mm-hmm. You know, interesting interview. People, I think, will have found it, you know, intriguing, because they don't very often hear someone talking about a business and how a business changes. If people wanted to know more about what you do, about your business, about you, how do they do that? How do they make contact?
So I'm a big fan of LinkedIn, as Nerina knows. I like to share many things that we do in our company, but also many things that I see working in the fashion industry, design industry, and generally the culture business. So I like to share their link. We have a website, of course, for Aquafil and for Econil, the nylon. So these ways, I guess they are the best.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for doing that, because that was really interesting. And, you know, it does tell a story of a journey, tells a story of how you had to make transformational change, tells a story about how you have to communicate differently, how you have to engage with a whole series of people, including the consumers as well. And so I think people will have found that really, really intriguing. So thank you for joining us. And thank you, you know, Nerina, for taking part in doing this, as you usually do excellently. So it's been great. So thank you, Samara. It's been a great interview.
So thank you.
You know, we'll end this interview.
Thank you so much.